this. We need a copywriter.
I know. I'm sorry. My lord.
Let's not insult any other races or cultures.
The wee wee frog frog.
Way to keep it classy, Canada.
The Finnish conspiracy.
Make them pay.
With chemistry, you can melt ice. You can't control the pop if you don't control the pop. The button stopped working. I've had to press it so many times.
Toothpaste, Fenris Wolf, and rotations per minute.
It's a love affair.
And welcome to Three in the Box, the Minnesota Hockey Podcast. This is episode number 42, being recorded live Wednesday, April 23rd, 2014. This is Aaron, and in tonight's episode, we talk about goalie controversies, the Finnish Jesus, absentee officials, and Cookie Watch 2014. In the studio with me is Kenny.
What up?
And Jive.
Good evening.
And before we get into things, I'd just like to remind you to follow us on Twitter at Three in the Box. We'll answer your questions, we'll snark, we'll say dirty things, and we'll be mean-spirited in a general sense.
And, you know, send pictures of us drinking beer.
And every once in a while, we're insightful, too.
A little bit.
I'll throw that in there. Usually sometime between the second and third period, right before we hit Snarkland, we have that moment of clarity.
It's like that perfect dart throwing moment where you're not quite drunk, but you're not sober.
Right. You're hitting that triple 20 like repeatedly, and then all of a sudden you're in ones.
Yeah.
And yeah, that happens basically every wild game that we cover.
So that perfect spot between here and there?
Exactly.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
We are the crotch and the Y of the road.
We are the taint of podcasts.
Oh, boy. I think we crossed
this
over.
This just took a wrong turn.
We crossed over in the third very period wrong territory already.
So with that, why don't we start talking about the Wild, huh? So obviously we're in Wild playoff season here. We're three games in. Wild are down 2-1 to the Avalanche. Losing two games in Colorado, then winning again here in Minnesota. Game one, overtime loss where we were up 4-2 at one point. I don't want to say a monumental collapse, but damn near.
Devastating.
Devastating loss in overtime. Avalanche tied up with 16 seconds left.
Seconds, dude.
And that's after Waugh pulled Varlamov with 3 minutes left. Three freaking minutes left.
Takes a goalie to have some balls like that, huh?
Yeah, no doubt. I know me and Kenny are watching the game going, what is he doing? He's just cementing his loss. And well, it was either he's going to look like a genius or he's going to look like an idiot. He looks like a genius kind of right now.
Well, no. He acted like a genius, but he still looks like an idiot.
I think Kenny's got it right.
probably. Well, you can't argue with the outcome, can you?
No. But that's still that punchable face that we've been tweeting about.
He's got a very punchable face. Saturday was not good at all. It was a collapse defensively. It was a defensively bad game, poorly played. The person who really suffered off of that bad defense was Brizgalov, where midway through the second game here, after letting in 3 goals on 14 shots, which admittedly isn't good, he didn't get much support from his defensive pairings. He was pulled just over halfway through the game. Kemper comes in, plays over half game because it goes in, plays just right around a half game of shootout hockey, and plays half a game there, then a full game on Monday.
Yeah.
So now he's got, you know, how many periods? What? Over 4 periods of shutout hockey.
Yeah.
He becomes the first goalie to get a shutout in his first playoff start since 1936 when Normie Smith did it for the Red Wings. Well, you remember Normie Smith, right?
Yeah. We go way back.
Kenny, remember him?
Yeah, I think I remember seeing him in my mom's womb play.
I think that's back when they used rubber hose as sticks and played with wooden balls. Yeah.
Skating, ice skates had the blades of bones.
Yeah, I think so. And no helmets, obviously.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, it's a good play by him. I just hope that Brizgalov's confidence is not shot now, because we may need him down the road here.
Well, and with that, you know, the Wild defense, like I said, was just terrible in the second game.
Right.
So it's hard to put a lot of blame on the three goals that Briz gave up. But it's tough to argue with the results so far with Kemper in net. Should we be riding Kemper for whatever remaining games we've got in the playoffs? I mean, right now we're down 2-1, so who knows what could happen. But do we ride Kemps to the promised land?
I'm going to have to say that I think it's going to be a goalie by committee type deal. I don't think that Kemper has the experience to, say, you know, hold on to that main role for the entire time. Yes, he's got a hot hand right now, and that's what you do. You have to play is your hot hand. But I think that down the stretch here, we may need one Brizgalov to step up and hopefully be able to contribute once again like he was at the end of the season there.
Well, here's my thoughts. You don't gain experience by not playing at all or not playing in the playoffs.
This is true.
Everybody's going to have their first playoff game. Everybody's going to have their first playoff series. I think this is Kemper's time right now, and I'm rooting for him. I think he's, you know, you might be saying hot hand, but I think he's, as we've seen later in the season, when he's been healthy, he's been well worth the money he's getting paid.
And, I mean, I got to say, you know, say what you will about Briz and Kemps. Well, I think they should probably go by a committee. Yo has already shown what he does in a season. He plays the hot hand. Kemps won a game and a half. If he gets blown out the next game, he could very well switch right back to Briz. But as long as Kemps is winning, he's gonna ride him until he's done.
If you're going to be playing your hot hand at any point, now is the time to do it, where it's do or die. You know, you don't ride it throughout the season when you've got a perfectly healthy goalie.
And I mean that said, you know, I was in kind of disagreement when Brizgalov got pulled out of the net the other night. I thought it was early to make that call.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they were necessarily goals that were completely his fault that they went in, you know.
But you also had to look at it, Kemps had faced 14 shots. Briz faced 14 shots. Briz gave up 3.
Yeah, and but they were 14 different shots.
This is true.
All a matter of timing and when they come in.
But I don't think the defense got any better.
And I'm not going to argue, because Kemps, he looked great when he came in. I'm not going to argue with that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the point that I was actually going to bring up, is that it did take, you know, I'm going to actually give Yo a compliment here. I mean, it took some balls that, you know, early in the game there, with only 3 goals being scored so far, he did. He pulled the trigger. And he's like, nope, we got to do this now.
Yeah.
I mean, it is do or die situation, so you may be more likely to jump ship or do something like that. But
one thing.
It was a decisive decision, just like pulling your goalie at 3 minutes with 3 minutes left in the game. It's like,
yeah,
coach made his mind up, you know.
And you know, and no one can argue with the fact that Kemper has come up huge when put into big pressure situations this year. He's been just monster. I mean,
absolutely.
He had those first 2 games of his season, which were terrible, and everyone's going, oh man, Kemper's not our goalie of the future. And then he's thrust back into a starting spot because of injuries, and he's lights out. So when the pressure's on, he seems to thrive. So if there's gonna be a time where he's forced into it, might as well be right now, I guess, you know.
Yeah. I say ride him. I said it earlier and I'll say it again. I mean, now's the time to ride your hot goalie, because now it is the do or die time.
So I mean, Kemper had a great game in game 3, but another player had a really great game in game 3, right?
Oh yeah, that would be Mr. Is it Michael or Mikhail? are we on NBC or FSN tonight?
Yeah, I don't know.
So Mr. Mikhail Granlin.
Mikhail.
Yeah. I figured Mikhail? I'd try to crossbreed him.
Right.
Mitchell? Granny.
Mitchell Grandlin.
The Finnish Jesus, as you may call him, wow, had an amazing game, finally stepped up.
We're going to have to ask our friend Yuka how to pronounce Jesus in Finland, because then we have Suomi something.
Yeah. Oh,
I don't know if it's Suomi Jesus, but we'll have to figure that out. Yuka, you're on the case.
He Granny stepped up. He looked absolutely amazing that game. You know, after getting completely just obliterated and pounded, hit left, right, and center in games one and two, it started off that way a bit in game three, but he persevered. There's a few times where he skated around the entire offensive zone for the Wild with the puck and took a shot off, similar to what happened with his game-winning goal in overtime. So with him actually stepping up like this, does this keep the Avs off him or make him a bigger target?
I don't know. I think that he's played well, but there's also been some other Wild players that have been performing well and have also been maybe, shall we say, kind of nuisances to the Avs. My example, I guess, would be, you know, kind of obvious, but Parise, he's been, you know, on numerous plays throughout the playoffs so far. You know, you see him down there still at the net, hacking away at the puck when the goalie's trying to freeze it up. I think they're going to be keeping more of their eyes on the nuisances like that, but I'm sure Granny will still get his attention.
Yeah, and I got to figure he's still going to be targeted. I mean, going into game one, it was obviously they were targeting the skill players of the Wild, which only makes the whining over the Cook incident that much more ridiculous, because they've been targeting our skill players the whole series. So I don't think it's going to change. Granlund's going to still be targeted. The bigger thing is the Wild need to score early, so they're
absolutely
not making it. If they can take the physical game away from Colorado, that's where Granlund can shine, because, you know, in overtime, they're not going to be finishing as many checks, because you know why? Because that could potentially put them out of position defensively. And we saw that actually in overtime on game three. You know, Granlund was weaving in and out. People were still chopping at him, but he was still, you know, just unbelievable. I mean,
he was sure. He was definitely showing that he wanted that goal, and I think he definitely deserved that goal. So is he going to be our next Finnish leader?
Well, isn't he already?
He kind of is. I mean, he's stepping up to that role.
My only other question, though, would be, you know, how careful should we be with him? How many concussions has he had so far this season?
Valid point. Is this going to be another? Is this going to turn into another Gabrick situation where you got a very talented, skilled player that is constantly injured and out?
Yeah. Lord, I hope not.
Hopefully not. I mean, I think he's probably already proven himself more or less of a glass jaw than Gabrick was.
He doesn't have the glass groin, at least. So right. I guess we got that going for
us.
Well,
didn't Gabby go from after his groin issues were fixed, he went to the shoulders now? Or he was out with shoulder injuries for
so,
a while
so
with New York.
So what you're saying is the groin is the gateway injury? Brings you into all other ones?
You know, financially, possibly.
Then you're smoking PCP in the back of a Denny's parking lot.
Remember, kids, stay away from the groin injuries.
Oh, Lord. So, but speaking of Granlund getting run, you know, over the first three games and basically just being a mayhem,
right?
You know,
it's kind of just been an ongoing theme, I think, in this series. We've seen a lot of chippy play, definitely coming from both sides. Being a Wild fan that I am, I'm probably going to put a little bit more of the blame on the Avs, but I mean, there's been chippy play coming from both sides of the puck. So with that, through those last three games, you know, we've had the chippy play. There's been several penalties, but there's also been like a lot of pushing, shoving, mashing faces into the ice, and putting cross checks on after the the whistle. I mean,
Eric Johnson. I mean, he was checking Parisi in the back of the head
multiple times,
punching and checking him in the freaking head.
Right. Where's our? I'm not even gonna go into this right now. So, let me just ask you guys this. So there's obviously the heightened intensity of the playoff games here. Emotions, they're running high. Is it too late for these refs to take this series back under control and bring some order to the chaos?
Well, I know that Russo was making a point of Brad Watson, I believe number 23, referee number
23.
23, 26, 20 something. It's 23 because the other Brad Meyer, is number 34. Both are two sequentially numbered referees. Yeah. But Watson was, Russo was making a point, even before the game got out of hand, of how many calls he was not observing. And, you know, by the time that, you know, things were starting to get called, it was the chippiness was already way out of hand.
Right.
I understand the desire to want them to play the game and just.
There's a fine line. You got to let them play.
Right.
Right.
But at the same point, I mean, at what point are you going to protect the players that are out there? I mean, it's a serious question, and I don't think the NHL wants to answer it because, you know what? Us talking about their crappy officiating is good for them because we're talking about the NHL. And it sucks because, you know, people are getting hurt.
Right.
Potentially serious injuries. I mean.
Which is leading up to what happened with Cook.
Yeah.
And his suspension. I mean, you know, there's been a lot of controversy about his knee-on-knee hit against Barry in Game 3. You know, Avs fans wanted his head on a platter, which they pretty much got. We now know that with his 7-game suspension. But, you know, even previous to this, Mark Kislev, the Denver Post, goes as far as saying that, you know, Minnesota came out for Game 3 wearing its bowling shirts, then got wild and crazy. apparently, he missed how Colorado came out on Game 1, or he just decides to ignore it,
right,
looking one-sided. But, you know, with these injuries coming from this, because Cook's knee-on-knee is not the only knee-on-knee that has happened in this postseason so far.
Nope.
His is not the only serious hit that has happened this postseason.
Nope.
However,
it is the only one that's knocked someone out for 4 to 6 weeks guaranteed.
Guaranteed, and he also got the highest suspension for it with 7 games.
Yep.
So, I mean, okay, big question is, obviously the NHL thinks this hit was intentional. How do you guys feel about it?
I think it was avoidable. I can't. It's hard to disagree with that. Cook had his targets on Barry, and he decided not to change course. So it's tough to argue against the fact that it wasn't, that he didn't see it coming. At the same point, I think the actions of Barry probably made it worse than it was. He may have, you know, been checked and just lost, you know, had the wind knocked out of him rather than busting up his MCL. But it's tough to put a lot of blame on him for trying to avoid a check. At that point, I got to say it's probably intentional. I have no problem with the suspension. I think the suspension is too long. You know, given the fact that, you know, Bickle basically did the same knee-on-knee against Sobotka in Game 2 of the Chicago-St. Louis
series.
That
one looked worse. That one looked a lot more intentional.
And that's the same game as Seabrook hit to the head on Backes. None of those had suspensions.
Seabrook got.
Seabrook had suspension. That was only 3 games for a hit on the head, right?
Yep.
And then we earlier in the season, James Neal, who has a similar checkered past to Cook, I think everyone can agree with that.
Yeah.
He had an intentional, and it was a no doubt intentional knee to the head of Brad Marchand. And while Marchand's on the ice, and he got 5 games, so the NHL is basically saying,
"Well,
if you target the head, no big deal. Target a knee, holy hell, stop."
We did have two different player safety commissioners at that time because we went from Shanahan to whoever's in there now.
Frenchie.
Yeah.
So, and I would have to say I don't know. I've been a victim of a hit like this back in my youth when I was playing.
Right, right.
Back when I was in a little finer shape. And I got to say that, you know, it's just not a clean play at all. And watching the replays, it's definitely, it's intentional. I mean, I can see the intent. I also see that he starts out, I think, with good intentions.
He's just going to lay out a hit.
He was getting ready to put on a hit, which is where I'm going to disagree with, like, the length of the suspension that's being handed out here. They make it sound like he made a beeline right when he got off the bench, straight for him, Nancy Kerrigan style, with the pipe in his hand and busted the guy's knee. I mean, it wasn't that bad. It still happened in the course of play, and in the heat of the game, he sticks his knee out, and it's dirty, but it was heat of the moment type of thing. I don't think that it was like premeditated or that it deserves a suspension of this length. But
the other thing that I saw when they were talking about the hit was that after he had made contact, he had moved his knee out to further injure, which when you look at it frame by frame, you could maybe get that. But, I mean, all this happens in a split second. He consciously, in a split second, goes, oh, he's moving. I'm going to take his knee out.
Right. And that's a problem. I think that's a problem with all of us. And you know, when we're in Replay Nation today, and we can look at every play frame by frame and break it down, and these things are happening so fast that slowing it down, you're taking a lot of context out of that.
Right.
I think he should have been suspended. I don't think most reasonable people have an issue with that. The length seems severe compared to other hits of similar nature this season.
And would something of like this have even come about had the refs had a little bit better control?
Yeah.
I mean, this is where I'm saying the refs have kind of lost their control over the game, or the series, I should say. And with that, these guys are going to run loose. They're going to piss each other off. There's going to be hits. There's going to be dirty plays. And, it's just going to snowball, and it's going to keep getting worse.
Hockey is so violent and dangerous.
It definitely can be at times. So do you guys think that the refs have lost control, or am I off in a la-la land?
I think they're trying to let them play because that's what the NHL wants. It's playoff time. This is where the NHL can get their ratings from. And, you know, people want to see a fast-paced game with a lot of big hits. And
they want to see a ton of whistles and a ton of people.
They definitely don't want it slowed down.
Right.
They want to keep the game going. However, I think that, you know, some of the calls and some of the missed calls have been fairly obvious and blatant that should be, and some of the ones that have been called have been way overzealous.
I think there's a common misconception that the players will police themselves. Right. We hear it every year in favor of fighting in hockey. The players will police themselves. I think the first three games of the series is an obvious showing of what happens when you let the players police themselves.
Right.
It's not good. I don't think it's really good for the sport, personally. And, you know, maybe this is a sign to whoever that you need someone and it's, you know, you're going to get punished. Mm-hmm. But honestly, if you're trying to send a message, seven games doesn't do it either, I don't think.
No, you don't take a guy out that is fairly detrimental to the team for seven games to make a message when, I don't know, in my honest opinion, that it was definitely not intentional. I mean, yes, maybe he should have got the knee-on-knee penalty suspension. You know, I will secede to, okay, it was a knee-on-knee, throw a suspension in there, way overkill on the amount of games.
Well, I say if you're trying to send a message, you don't give a seven-game suspension. That doesn't send a message. I mean, maybe in the playoffs that's really a 14-game suspension. But if you want to send a message that a knee-on-knee hit is not good, you know, make it 10 games, make it 15 games. But and this is the longest, one of the longest suspensions of the season.
Right. No, actually, it is the longest knee-on-knee suspension since the 2011-2012 season.
And it's funny. I mean, I already mentioned the James Neal one, which was also another knee-on-knee. You had Taylor Hall last year, his hit on Cal Clutterbuck. I think most of us remember that because
it took Clutterbuck out for...
Took him out for a few games at least. They had to pull him off on a stretcher.
Yep.
I remember that, and it didn't look good. We thought his knee was busted. But, you know, if you look at video of it, it doesn't look a whole lot different than what we saw with Cook. And that got two games.
And then there was another one with Kevin Porter who got a four-game suspension.
It's insane. I don't get it. There's no consistency. And I don't disagree with the suspension.
How come Bickle hasn't got suspended, and how come was it Smith from Detroit?
Yeah,
Brendan Smith and on Brad Marchand again.
That looked very similar to the
that one looked very similar to what happened with Cook and Barry. However, I mean the Brian Bickle one on Sobotka, absolutely over the top, completely looked intentional. What, Chicago's not allowed to have two guys suspended during the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, the only suspensions that have been longer, there's only been three suspensions this season that have been longer, and one was a check to the head, one was punching an unsuspecting player, that was Sean Thornton basically throwing down, I can't remember who it was, but David Clarkson, a line change, leaving the bench. Basically.
Oh, sure.
So it's like, I don't know. The head, check to the head, three games. Check to the head, three games. Check to the head, two games. Why is the head less important than a knee? If they're really serious about player safety, head injuries are serious. You may not be able to heal a head injury. Knees will heal.
Well,
you got prosthetics.
Yeah. the other thing yeah. with and maybe I was
still walk.
I right. was jumbling this up a little bit, but with the player safety committee with their video talking about, well, according to the CBA, he hasn't been suspended for any like thing, you know, in the past 180 games or 100 whatever it was. But because he does have priors, right. there is this.
Even we'll just though gloss over
we'll
that.
Just gloss over that part. So
well, and I think that I can't remember who it was on Twitter, but they pointed out that, you know, is it not possible that a player has cleaned up his game and still made a dirty hit? I mean, if you look at Cook and his penalty minutes, they're way down from you know 5 years ago.
And that's the thing, is if you've seen any evidence of his play throughout this season, you know that. He's not making the hits like what he used to. Not that he's not being physical.
No, yeah.
But he's playing clean. He's being good about it. And it goes back to what you say. You know, we watch these replays in slow motion, you know, frame by frame by frame. When it's out there and you're in the heat of the moment, that happens in a split second. I mean, and it's just one little fire of your brain that says, go, and... I mean, that sometimes you can't go back from that.
No.
You know? And I don't know. I wasn't in the hearing room. I don't know if he showed any sort of remorse that
maybe
he knocked a player out.
Maybe he had a bowl of dead babies and he was eating it. And, you know,
right.
And they're like, oh, geez, now you're getting seven, buddy.
So
that's all we can give you.
Right. So does this go to arbitration? Does he take it to arbitration?
I don't think so.
He's just going to deal with it?
I think
that he would at least argue the length.
That's what I had seen earlier. Anything over six games, he can negate arbitration through Bettman, and they can get a neutral negotiator in there.
My question on this, though, would be, so during the regular season, you'll lose your salary for the games that you're missing, correct?
Right.
Yes.
And it was pointed out to me by you guys tonight that in the playoffs, it doesn't quite work like that. Since they're playing for a bonus now,
right?
They end up they're not getting paid by the game. So I wonder if that does still have an effect on his bonus, or
it doesn't. However, Kenny actually brought up the point where they say that he's not considered a repeat offender under the CBA, but he had the priors. The priors, the repeat offender would only change his fine. So if he's viewed as a repeat offender, his fine would actually be increased.
Got it.
Per game. Whereas in assessing the amount of games lost, they can look at everything. So that's basically why they're pointing out the two different lengths. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but that's what they put in the CBA. So
thanks for the clarification.
Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but, you know. But since we're talking about Cook, we're going to roll out a little new section here. We're going to call the Three in the Box mailbag. And the first question we got from Eric S., a.k.a. at Mini Finn on Twitter. He asked, Three in the Box, how does Matt Cook's absence in the rest of the series affect the neutralizing of the Avs' first line? I think that's a brilliant question, actually. Kenny, what do you think?
You know, Matt Cook brings a lot of playoff history with and experience, and I think shutting down a top line, he's very good at. Obviously, that line did not do nearly what they did the first two games. I mean, they held them to 0 points. They shut them out. You know, some of the other players today were saying, you know, that's what we need to do. We need to just keep them busy, keep them out of our zone, keep that first line trapped in the neutral zone and in the offensive zone. And, I mean, you know, they wanted him for his size and his checking ability, yeah. Which now they brought Nino up to replace him, it sounds like.
Right.
I think it's going to be detrimental a little bit, but I think that once Nino gets comfortable, or hopefully he will come out being comfortable with playing with, was it Halla and anyways, on that third line, I think that line will be just fine.
And I'm going to go a little different. I mean, obviously, I think it's going to have an impact just because Cook is a force. I don't know that it's going to necessarily impact as much with Nino coming in to fill his shoes on that line to try to neutralize the Avs' first line. I think the bigger impact is actually going to be on PK.
Oh, absolutely. That's going
to
hurt.
Because then Yo's going to have to find someone. I don't know if it ends up being Niederreiter or someone else to fill that spot on the PK. I know in Game 3, Yo was riding out even Granlund on the PK once Cook was in the penalty box. So we might see some weird combinations in those PK lines. I think that is actually going to be the bigger impact than trying to neutralize the first line, even though the first line has been electric, at least in the first two games.
Well, you know, the thing going back here with the PK, too, to worry about is now, are we going to have Brodziak on the PK? Because we've seen how well he can clear a puck.
Yeah. I hope his checks clear better than his pucks. So.
And as far as my opinion goes on Matt Cook, I think that he is obviously a valuable part of the team, and his absence will be missed. I think that we have people who can fill his shoes. The only thing that I think that we will be missing is maybe his experience and his veteran, a little bit of veteran leadership in there. Somebody who's been down here, been in the trenches, done that before, that's where I think we might have that effect. I think that it was more of a system that was holding up that first line in Game 3 there, that, you know, Yo figured something out that,
right,
you know, we couldn't figure out in the first couple games. So
I think a lot of it had to do with line matching in those first two games.
Yeah,
they're trying to match first versus first, and while our first line is great, they're maybe not good enough defensively to defend that first line of the Avs.
That's going to be a coaching situation.
Yeah, and that actually leads us into our other question from our good friend Yuka, and that's at Yuka. Oh,
I'll let you butcher his last name.
Oh boy, Yuka, you're gonna have to give us some pronunciation. I'm gonna give it a shot.
Karikitu.
He's not Japanese, dude.
That's right.
Yuka Karakaito. Karakaito.
We're anyway, sorry.
He just sent us a pronunciation.
Yuka is part of our Finnish Wild Mafia, hashtag Finnish Wild Mafia on Twitter. He asked, three in the box, give your opinion on Barry Trotz. Could he be the next coach? So let's say the Wild get knocked off here in the first round and Yo's job is no longer. Barry Trotz, if you don't already know, he was the longtime coach of the Nashville Predators. Just released this past week here. He put out a great article, or bought a page in the Nashville whatever paper, basically thanking the fans for the 15 years he spent in Nashville. Is Barry Trotz, you know, he seems, the one thing that I go with Barry Trotz, it makes sense, and I'm glad that you brought this up, is that Barry Trotz, A, has worked for Craig Leopold before, because Craig Leopold used to own the Nashville Predators.
This is true.
And Barry Trotz has plenty of experience with Mr. Suter.
This is also true.
So I at this point, I got to go, man, if Yo is canned, which could be a pot, I mean, even if Yo goes deep in the playoffs, if Leopold likes him that much, he could do it anyway.
Okay. But the one thing that I see that might not be solved would be our problem of going into the playoffs and leaving early.
I you know what? I'm looking at that stat right now, mm-hmm. and I completely agree with you, Jive.
He hasn't shown any ability to you know, advance very deep into the playoffs himself. So,
but in fairness, he's also he inherited an expansion franchise.
Okay,
and we all know that the Wild have been, I think, pretty lucky as far as expansion franchises go, as far as getting playoff chances pretty early in our existence.
Yeah, because wasn't Nashville brought into the league right around the same time
before,
as Minnesota?
Before the Wild War.
Just
yeah.
before? Like yeah. a year
yeah.
before or
yeah,
something
like
that.
Yeah, a year
that.
Or two, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at, okay, so 15 years with Nashville. He has over 500 wins.
Yeah.
Or over 500 wins with one franchise.
Yep.
You know, I'm kind of agreeing with Jive, though. I mean, he's brought the teams to the promised land, but never actually got them the golden fruit. He, you know, the years that he made it in the playoffs, lost in the first round, 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 lost in the second round, lost in the second round.
Hey, he's gotten further than Yo has.
Hey, and on the counterpoint to this, maybe he just fits right in here in Minnesota.
I wouldn't argue it. I think he would be a very fitting coach. Obviously, he's got tenure with the team, and he's good enough to stick around.
I'm not gonna be swayed by his early playoff exits. If Yo is gone, be it he gets deep in the playoffs or he loses the first round, I think Trotz is a very, very possible candidate.
Oh, I think that there's several good signs that point to him being a great possibility if in fact Yo does lose his job. But
yeah, I think if Yo's not here, I'm gonna put it at 95% that it's Trotz that has come into the Wild.
As long as it's not Pierre Maguire.
Everyone loses at that point, right?
I will start rooting for Colorado.
Pierre is going to come and be the assistant coach here on Three in the Box. Just for Kenny.
I'm leaving.
That's a big stick you got there. So with that, we got a few more games left ahead of us. We're only three games in this playoffs.
Two more guaranteed.
We got one Thursday. That'd be tomorrow night at 8:30 Central. And then we have one Saturday in Colorado again, 8:30 Central. And then if needed, we'll have one Monday back here in Twin Cities. No time set yet. And Wednesday, a week from today, again, no time. That would be in Colorado if we get to the game seven. So let's go into the game of the week. So game of the week last week was Wild at Avalanche on Saturday. That was the 4-2 blowout. I'll say blowout.
I wouldn't call that a blowout.
It's a loss.
It almost was 4-1.
It was almost 4-1. Kenny was the big winner. He's the only one who picked the Avs. That moves him 2 points closer to first place. He's now at 10 points. Me and Jive have 12, and the Meat Beast is at 8. And the big loser of the week was the Meat Beast, so he got to pick first. He is...
Hold on.
He's phoned in his pick.
But we haven't announced what the game is yet.
Oh, shit. Right.
So...
I wonder what teams are going to be playing.
Well, I think it's going to be...
Is it the Gophers? Oh, no.
No.
Is it the Wild against the...
I'm going to go with Colorado.
Colorado?
I think it's the Lanch.
Really?
The Lanch. No. We are not starting the Lanch. No.
Regardless, that's an interesting pick.
No, yeah, it is.
How'd you decide that?
So I'm going with the Saturday game, Game 5, only because it's going to be the one that, depending on how tomorrow night's game goes, could vary the score on Saturday.
Right.
If the Wild happen to pull out a victory tomorrow, which I'm counting on because I got them winning in 6, so they have to, they are now going to be...
Because Kenny said so.
Because I said so. At that point, Colorado's going to be fighting back a little bit more. It's going to be a tougher game, closer game. However, if Colorado wins, I think
that's
Colorado...
That's an elimination game at that point.
And they're going to be at home, and you're going to be looking at a bigger blowout.
Okay.
So, you know, depending on what happens tomorrow, could very well determine the outcome on Saturday.
Sure. So with that, Meat Beast is working...
I thought he was going through customs or something like that. He
said something about the Mexican Federales and gear.
Yeah.
Hopefully his head is still attached. That's all I hope.
Cavity searches and something like that, trying to get gear through the border.
Just don't mess with those drug lords down there.
But he, in his absence, he picked 3-2 with the Wild winning. I get the next pick, and I go 3-2 with the Az winning, as much as it pains me. You look at the West right now. There's been 11 games in the West, and the home team has won all of them. That's the only reason I'm going with the Avs.
Wow.
Yeah. It's 11-0 for the home team. I'm sure something's going to change eventually here, but it's hard to argue with that at this point.
That means we're going to have a lot of 7-game series if this keeps up with a lot of 1, 2, 3, and 4 seeds going.
And especially the way teams are just pounding each other and injuring each other.
It's going to be a bloodbath. Insane.
There'll be like 3 people on each bench by the time we get to the Cup.
Jive.
So, we got a lot of 3-2 drinkers in the house, it sounds like.
We are Minnesotan.
Right. You guys know the winning scores, but you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't know the winning score for this Saturday. But I do. And
yeah.
That's correct. My pick is going to be 3-1, and I'm going to go with the Avs winning this one again. I'm going to go along with you, Kenny. I'm hoping that the Wild can pull one off here again tomorrow night. That's my plan, and I'm sticking to it. Okay. And when they do pull that off, though, I think it's going to be a tough game back at Pepsi Center there in Colorado. So, that's my pick, 3-1, the Avs.
All right, and since I get to wrap this one up, I'm going to go with the Wild winning 2-1 because
you have to.
I have to. Following my bracket, they can't have another loss. But I think it's going to be a really tight game. It's going to be close. It's going to be I'm going to go high shots on goal with a lot with a very high save percentage on both sides.
You're going to have Kemper and Varlamov flopping around.
Yes, they're going to look like Flopsburg in the net.
Right.
They'll be on the ice more than a Manhattan. I don't know. I lost it right
that,
there.
That would probably be a martini, but okay.
No, martinis are served straight up. No ice.
We need to drink.
I think it's about that time. So I'm going to wrap things up. When we're not live tweeting Wild games at 3 in the Box, you can find me on Twitter at AaronGMP, and you can check us out. We are also Pinrot, and you can find us at pinrot.com. Jive.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jive Midnight. You'll also catch me hanging out with these guys here as long as I'm not chaining my desk at work, being put through the grinder by my boss. Right.
And this is Kenny. I just want to say big shout out and thank you to Yuka and Eric for the questions. Keep them coming. You can follow me on Twitter at RottenK999 and usually live tweeting and snarking with Aaron over here, sometimes Jive.
Humanga's big.
And I think that's the show.